Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing fine, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing good. We got some announcements tonight.
2023 is almost upon us, and once again, we're hoping to see many of you at CrimeCon. There's a CrimeCon that will be in Orlando, Florida in 2023, as well as in London, UK. And this is what you've hoped for, Justin. One code for both events to keep things very simple for everyone.
Gen Y.
That's right. GENWHY. Go to crimecon.com and you can find whichever event that you want to go to. Use our code Gen Y and you'll save on your tickets. So get a head start on that and we hope to see you there.
So, Aaron, tonight's case, when you brought this up to me, at first I just thought, oh, this is one of those, was it an accident or was it homicide? And then the more you read about it, the more you just go, what is going on? Just, this is the most crazy off the wall case I've read about in a while. It takes such bizarre turns that I'm excited to talk about it. So what are we discussing tonight?
Well, tonight we're going to be discussing a case that we hope we can sort out because there is a death at the center of it. It concerns a professor named Marianne Shockley, who died while she was hanging out one evening with her boyfriend and a friend of theirs at that acquaintance's home near Milledgeville, Georgia.
They were having a good time, probably having a few drinks and stuff, and hanging out in a hot tub. But we'll get into that. So Marianne Shockley, she was a UGA professor. She was 43 years old at the time. And she was the girlfriend of Marcus Lillard. He was 41 at the time of the incident. And Marianne was a professor at this university. What did she do, Aaron? This is kind of cool stuff.
Well, she was an academic professional associate for the UGA Department of Entomology. So she was into insects. And primarily, she was interested in entomophagy, which is human consumption of insects.
I've had crickets. It's kind of like a bag of chips, but they were crickets. They were salted and spiced up. But Yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan. I would prefer other things.
We're going to get into her death and the situation that happened one evening. But before we move on, I do want to say that the scientific community who is into entomophagy and sees the benefits, they feel like this was a terrible blow because Mary Ann Shockley was amazing at getting people to step outside their comfort zone, to see this for the benefits that there are, you know, that come along with it. She would even host this bug camp every summer. And so they would have students trying these things, you know, mealworms mixed in with Chex Mix or crickets mixed into Rice Krispies.
Yeah. And she also had two teenage children and just was well-renowned. She was referred to as an international leader in this field. So I'm sad to see that something like this happens to her.
Her boyfriend was a car salesman and a finance manager, but he was also on first offender probation. This had to do with a drug bust that happened at a car dealership where he was working, right? It was 20 years of probation.
Yeah.
But at the time, he was working at a dealership in Albany. He worked there for a few weeks, and then he quit and went on a trip with Mary Ann and her students to Ecuador. This is kind of important because he seemed to very much support her passions. Now, this takes place on Mother's Day weekend in 2019, so this is a fairly recent case. So on May 11th, Mary Ann went to Milledgeville, and she went there to meet her guy, Marcus, and they went to his dad's home, and then they ate at a restaurant, and that's when they decided they're going to go over to Clark Heindel's house. Marcus and Heindel had been friends for a few years. You know, they get together, listen to music and drink, maybe partake in some drugs.
Clark is older. He's 69 years old, was a retired psychologist, and had a yoga studio that he ran. He had worked in the Georgia prison system and owned private practices, obviously. They're just going to hang out in his hot tub and have a good time.
At 11 p.m., Marcus called and texted several women that he knew. Two of them happened to be respiratory therapists. And what he was trying to find out was, how do you revive someone who was unconscious? One of these women said, you need to call 911 if someone's unconscious. But it's not until 2 hours later that there's a call to 911.
So already we have a delay in them seeking official help for Mary Ann.
1:06 a.m., Heindel called 911. And in that call, he said that Mary Ann had drowned, but was still breathing. But then he said she wasn't breathing. This is kind of confusing, but this is what happens, right, Justin? We've listened to a number of 911 calls, and people can be not very helpful at times because either they're panicked or they're nervous, what have you.
Or they're on drugs, it's 1 a.m, and it's pouring rain, and they don't know what's going on.
So help arrives at 1:20 a.m. These are the first responders. Mary Ann was lying on the pool deck near the hot tub. And they could see she had blood coming out of her head. She had a head wound. Clark Heindel and Marcus Lillard had been performing CPR on Mary Ann. All three of these individuals were unclothed.
So this is already, to me, a bizarre scene. You have three adults that are all just naked, hanging out by a hot tub. One of them's bleeding from an obvious head wound. So I assume maybe she slipped and fell, hit her head, knocked herself out, went into the hot tub, and that's where she drowned. But with two other adults there, how is this possible?
Mary Ann was pronounced dead at the scene, and these first responders, they suspected that she had been dead for a lot longer than these two men had stated. Marcus told police when he talked with them that he left the pool area for about 15 minutes to get some firewood. When he returned, he found his girlfriend, Mary Ann, unconscious in the hot tub. And Heindel was in the pool, which is obviously nearby. But the police, they don't buy his story. because Marcus seems to be acting strangely and Marianne has this head wound. So of course, these men are being asked, what do you know about this? Did you strike her? Was there an altercation? What happened? But Marcus said Marianne got her head wound because they fell down on the pool deck after he had pulled her out of the hot tub. In other words, it was difficult for him to get her out and he slipped, he fell, and she hit her head.
Yeah.
Heindel said he was swimming in the pool, but at the far end, away from the deck. And he was talking about how Marcus found Marianne in the hot tub. So they performed CPR. He said that Marianne appeared to be breathing faintly, so they assumed or thought she was coming back into consciousness. And that's why they didn't call 911 straight away. He said they performed CPR and waited about 45 minutes to call 911. The police report, it seems to indicate that Marcus was cooperative, and he also gave the police both his and Marianne's cell phone straight away. But of course, going through his phone, they found that he had started texting people that he knew to find out what to do at 11:15 p.m. on the 11th to see if they knew how to perform CPR, right?
Yeah, 2 hours earlier. Yeah.
That's about 2 hours before they called 911. Now, of course, a search of the area turned up a couple of items. They found Marianne's glasses and bracelet in some bloody grass in an area away from the hot tub. So what are they supposed to do, Justin? They need to separate these two guys and really interview them.
Yeah, because right now their stories, I mean, they can play off of each other and just mirror what the other one's saying, but they want to know what happened here and they want to get the individual takes. So they take Marcus Lillard over by the patrol car and they take Clark up to his porch.
Now, I said that they didn't really believe Marcus. And one of the things that he said that they didn't believe was this firewood search. It was raining heavily. So they're wondering, why would you be looking for firewood when it's been raining?
And there was, I guess, chopped firewood that was nearby that would have been ready to go if you wanted to set a fire in a burn pit or something. But instead, he's wandering off in the woods, naked, in the rain. Got it.
Drugs?
Exactly. If he is actually doing what he says he's doing. Now, Clark, he keeps trying to kind of evade this conversation and he keeps stepping away. But the police officer is saying, no, you need to stay right here. Like, I'm talking to you right here on your porch. But then that police officer got a phone call. And he turned around for a second to, you know, answer it. It was probably a sergeant or somebody calling, going, what's going on over there? And as soon as he turned around, Clark walks off, walks into his house. He's gone immediately.
So this officer, this deputy, then heads over to the door and starts banging on the door and calling out for Clark Heindel. But then there's a gunshot.
Yeah, it was just like this muffled noise inside. And they force their way in and they find him dead in his bedroom from a gunshot wound to the head. He took the time to write a note saying he didn't know what happened to Marianne. So this is mere moments of, you know, just minutes after the police have arrived and are trying to question him. He runs off and shoots himself. Now we have two dead people at this scene.
And this is where things are going to change dramatically. The sheriff and the GBI are called in. The police on scene turned in their phones and their evidence sheet, handed over the crime scene completely to the GBI. So the Georgia Bureau of Investigation is in charge of the scene, and they spent about 15 hours there. They wanted to make sure that nothing was disturbed, and they were waiting for daylight so they could really look everything over.
You have three adults, two of them are now dead, and Marcus Lillard, the only surviving member of this group, is giving a strange story of wandering in the woods looking for firewood.
May 13, 2019, the GBI crime lab finished Marianne's autopsy, and Justin, she didn't die of drowning.
No, they found that it was strangulation. And the head wound she had, as bad as it was, but it didn't actually have anything to do with her death. So this is obviously foul play. Something went wrong here, and Marcus isn't able to come up with any answers for the GBI.
At least none that they're willing to accept at this point.
Yeah.
And he was arrested fairly quickly on that Monday. He was charged with murder by strangulation, concealing a death, and aggravated assault. And the sheriff spoke about Marianne's death and these charges in a press conference. The sheriff, Bill Massey, said, "I don't know how to explain this to people who are not in our business, but when we first arrived at the crime scene, there was just something about it that was not right, and it was just sort of a bizarre, different kind of case. It was just the totality of circumstances that made it seem that this wasn't a simple case of drowning." And, you know, we've talked about this before. It's the intuition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their gut instincts. Officers, police, they have seen and experienced a lot. So there are times where they get somewhere and they have a pretty good idea about what's going on.
And they knew something was off as soon as they showed up. You know, with the EMTs there saying that she's been dead for a little while, their stories being weird, one of them running off and killing himself immediately. Now, the sheriff says, "We can't really document exactly what happened. We do know from the phone calls that they had reached out to several people, had sent out group texts to try to get help." And personally, I think they really can document a lot of what happened that night between these text messages and some of their conflicting stories, if you want to call it that.
Well, but there's a tricky part to this, Justin. You know, the sheriff is there telling the press that he doesn't think Clark Heindel had anything to do with what happened to Marianne Shockley, but he knew the person, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's fair for him to say that. I will say this. He does say it's pure speculation.
Yeah.
That he's arriving at this opinion.
And the fact that he impulsively took his own life as soon as he was being questioned, that looks very suspicious to me, because that reeks of guilt and I don't want to deal with this or the ramifications.
There's only one person to go after in this situation. It's Marcus Lillard.
He's the only one alive. Yeah. And all we have is his story because he's the only person around to tell it.
We're going to be describing statements by people who were there on scene after they arrived. And this is all because there was a probable cause hearing in June of 2019, right?
Yeah.
And there was a GBI special agent, Michael Maven, who testified about what first responders witnessed when they got to the house. And they saw Marcus assisting Clark Heindel with CPR. But sheriff's deputies' body cameras captured him touching Marianne's genitals.
They found beer bottles, bloody towels, leaves at the house, like they've been going back and forth from things. Marcus said that he and Heindel shook the flowers. They had gone and found hydrangeas, and they are shaking the flowers and these leaves over her body, and they, I guess, describe it as a ceremonial rite or some kind of ritual to help her. I mean, okay. He also talks about they made, I guess, mushroom tea or a psychedelic tea and were trying to get her to drink it after this incident. I don't think that's going to help the problem.
Maven also testified that Marcus said he didn't think Heindel had anything to do with what happened to Marianne. He didn't think he tried to have sex with her, had sex with her, or murdered her. Now, Marcus himself said in his statement to police that he and Marianne just kissed that night. There was no sex. Now, this agent also testified about the suicide note, saying he just said that he did not know what happened to Marianne, but it happened on his watch and he can't live with it. He said he'd had a good life and it was time for him to go. But according to Maben, it's more of a situation where he's saying this happened on his watch and he can't deal with it. That's according to this special agent, Michael Maben.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm thinking, you're all on drugs. None of you have any clothes on. There's drugs in your system. Why wouldn't this be sexually related. Why wouldn't this be some kind of possible orgy gone wrong? And they now are having to deal with an unconscious person who is dying. I mean, and they're not equipped to do it, especially when they're so out of it. I just think that there's a lot of explanations here that the police and the investigators and the GBI are all kind of going around and not really looking at or dismissing very easily.
January 2020, Marcus Lillard indicted on 4 charges: felony murder, involuntary manslaughter, reckless conduct, and concealing a death. But the grand jury in March of 2021 re-indicted Marcus Lillard for aggravated assault and dropped the charge for concealing a death. He's still charged with felony murder, involuntary manslaughter, and reckless conduct. So this is headed toward trial. April 4th, 2022.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, the prosecutors, they were stating that Marcus accidentally strangled Marianne while they were having sex in the hot tub. After all, the autopsy determined she had died by manual strangulation. There's a reason why they say that this happened accidentally. They're going to bring in witnesses that will back up, you know, what they're saying here in court. They're saying that the three of them did drugs that night. Toxicology reports showed that Marcus tested positive for cocaine. Marianne's blood alcohol level was 0.11, and she had a high amount of ecstasy in her system. Clark Heindel also had ecstasy in his system.
And ecstasy's a drug that a lot of people use to enhance sexual encounters and stuff like that. So this, to me, I think that they were doing something together.
The defense, of course, says Marcus Lillard had nothing to do with this. He was in the woods when Marianne died. They're saying when Marcus came back and found Marianne unconscious, he obviously had nothing to do with what happened to her.
He's got an alibi now that he wasn't there when whatever happened happened. And it was his friend, Clark, who probably did something. And this is really easy to throw Clark under the bus as the person, you know, the perpetrator of this crime, because he's dead. He can't defend himself.
Marcus talked about that evening, said he and Marianne got to Clark's house about 7 p.m. They smoked marijuana. Then Marcus and Heindel played bongos and the accordion. My understanding is Marcus played the bongos and Heindel played the accordion. And then Marcus and Marianne, they removed their clothes and they got in the pool. Apparently Heindel stayed near the porch. And then Marcus says he and Marianne, they kissed. He said then he walked around the woods for 15 minutes to get firewood. And of course, when he came back, he found Marianne unconscious in the hot tub. And so he picked her up and dropped her in the deep end of the pool. And Marianne hit her head when he dropped her. So he swam Marianne to the shallow end and carried her out of the pool from there. The defense, they state Heindel must have drugged Marcus and Marianne because there's no evidence to show Marcus strangled Marianne. And Marcus, he didn't call 911 right away because he was drunk. He was intoxicated. So this is kind of an interesting play, Justin, because the defense, we're basically talking about Matthew Tucker here. He's saying there's no evidence that he strangled his girlfriend, that Marcus strangled Marianne, that he put his hands on her.
Yeah.
They've not proven this.
Yeah, it's like she died from strangulation, but who strangled her? And if Marcus is out in the woods, well, that only leaves Clark. Hence, Clark's the one that did this.
And the other thing I think that helps them here is that Marcus didn't immediately throw Clark under the bus, right? Mm-mm. He said, I don't think he would do anything like that. And he didn't mention that he thought it could have happened until he found out that Marianne had been strangled.
He comes out with, this is an accident, and then he shifts his story to, okay, it's possible that he did this.
Right. Now, the assistant DA, Nancy Scott Melchor, she read a letter that Marianne had written. This is a letter that her family discovered in her room after she died. And it kind of got into her past relationships. And in it, she wrote, and still I go, I know he isn't right for me, meaning Marcus, because apparently she would date the wrong kind of guys. So they're trying to show this as, well, she knew he was bad news and yet she was dating him. But yeah, he's bad news. He could have done this. Now, I'd already brought up that the defense was saying that there's no proof that Marcus did this, and also that Marcus never suspected that Clark could have done this either until he found out that obviously Heindel was dead. And then, of course, there is the fact that Marianne was strangulated. There was a recorded phone call from jail, and Marcus said that Marianne must have choked on her own vomit.
Wow. Choking and strangulation are two different things. And as if he's trying to figure out what happened, because he's as much in the dark as everyone else.
There are various witnesses brought in, including the women who had received text messages from Marcus, Marianne's sister, and then former sex partners of Marcus, as well as the medical examiner. Now, Justin, a lot of these witnesses are going to be very favorable to the prosecution,
yeah,
because they will be saying things like, well, Marcus liked to put his hands around my neck when we were having sex. I think a couple of them even said that they had gone unconscious at one point because of this. So it kind of sets up like what they were saying, that this probably started as an accident because things got out of hand. But the medical examiner, Dr. Melissa Sims Stanley, the one who did Marianne's autopsy, she's the one that found that Marianne had died from manual strangulation. Now, she talked about injuries that she noticed on Marianne's body. These included scrapes, contusions, abrasions. These were on her neck, her torso, trunk area, arms, and legs. She also had fractured ribs and bruises. Now, those were consistent with the CPR. Her arms and legs were bruised. That's consistent with her being carried around. And then there was the laceration on the right side of her forehead. Marianne had hemorrhaging on the soft tissue of her throat and tongue, consistent with manual strangulation.
So this phone call from jail just is being used to show he really had no idea, or he's trying to distance himself from what actually happened.
And he still thinks it was some kind of an accident, really.
Yeah.
That's what he thinks. Now, according to this medical examiner, a lot of these injuries happened at or near Marianne's time of death. But Marcus, you know, he admits to accidentally dropping Marianne. But there's something about this, Justin, this strangulation. there are these classic signs, right? Where the hands go around the neck and compress it. But there's also a bone in the neck there that usually is broken in such cases, but in this case, it wasn't.
And with the hyoid bone, it's like right below your jaw. So it's very high up. If your hand is in the center or down on someone's throat, it will not affect that bone.
It doesn't seem like, at least for this medical examiner, that that's a concern here. There's no question for her that this was manual strangulation. There's nothing else here. There was a sexual assault kit done, but it didn't reveal any evidence. Mm-hmm. So what do they make of this? I mean, you have drugs involved, whether it's marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy. There are witnesses coming forward talking about rough sex with Marcus. This does not really look good for him, does it?
No, it's. I think the prosecution painted a pretty clear picture of what they suspect happened that night. With the amount and type of drugs that were involved and his sexual kinks and patterns from his previous relationships, they're really trying to paint this picture of this is who this guy is. And this was, they could even say this was possibly an accident, but he's the one that did this.
Now, the defense, they really rest upon this idea that there's no evidence whatsoever, no proof that Marcus Lillard is the one that killed Marianne Shockley.
Yeah. They're literally saying Clark probably did this because Marcus wasn't there. So you have to decide this man's guilt or innocence based on how much you believe he did this. And if you can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Marcus's hands were the ones around her throat, then you have to acquit.
And I find it interesting because they couldn't find any evidence that she had had sex that evening. And you have these witnesses coming forward and saying, yes, when I had sex with Marcus, he put his hands around my neck. But apparently, according to Marcus, and this is just from, you know, obviously the notes, he says that he didn't have sex with Marianne that night. So you wonder, I mean, unless something else happened, he apparently didn't have a reason to put his hands around her neck.
Yeah, I think they're splicing hairs there. I don't think you have to be completely engaged in intercourse to be strangling somebody. You could use it as foreplay too, but
Yeah, very true. But I think the main takeaway though is that you had two men there and one of them claims to have not been there and the other one can't say anything.
Yeah.
How do you know where to place the blame? Right? I think it's a valid question. This is the question that went to the jurors. This jury deliberated for 35 minutes on this.
35 minutes, Aaron. Personally, I think that if somebody's deliberated for 35 minutes, that's a bad sign.
What do you mean a bad sign? For who?
For the accused.
Yeah, I don't know. I think what the 35 minutes says is they knew what to do.
Yeah.
That's how I take it.
But usually when you know what to do, it's not in the accused favor. Because if you think he's not guilty, there could be some discussion of, okay, how did you come to that conclusion? But if everyone thinks he is guilty, well, there's no discussion. It's okay, we can find him guilty and come back real quick. But in this case, how do they find?
The jury acquitted Marcus Lillard of all charges.
So not a single person on that jury thought that he was guilty. There was no discussion, no deliberation here. It was just, they went back, said not guilty, and put together their note to the bailiff, because all this takes time. If you've ever served on a jury, 35 minutes, it didn't, I would say it probably took them 5 minutes to get back to the jury room, get settled in, discuss this, and then another 15 minutes to get everyone back into the courtroom and settled for them to make this announcement. I mean,
do you disagree with the jury, Justin?
I think that you can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt. You can't definitively say what happened here, because the only person talking is saying he was off in the woods when it happened.
We can laugh off his story, Justin, and say it doesn't make sense, but he was also on drugs. He was also drinking. So who knows, right?
I mean, even if he's lying, even if he did do this, how do you prove it? I mean, I think the prosecutor did as good of a job as they could have. But how do you say this person killed her and not that person? I am a little surprised by their decision, but I understand their decision.
I'm not surprised by the decision here. I just think it could have turned out very differently if Clark Heindel had never been a part of it. You know what I mean? If it wasn't at his house.
Well, yeah.
If you only had Marcus and Marianne there, that's it. I think this comes out very differently.
Well, yeah. I mean, at that point, it's obvious that it's foul play. It's obvious that it's a criminal act and not an accident. So if you remove the other player out of the equation here, then yeah, it's obviously he's going to be found guilty. That's a no-brainer because you can't argue that it was an accident at that point.
Well, I think it becomes a complicated case just simply because they set it up as this probably happened because he was starting things up with her and had his hands around her neck, and then it went wrong. And of course, he didn't make good decisions then, you know, from there on out. I don't think they ever came out and said that he had planned to kill her.
No.
Or that there was some argument here. This literally was, he took things too far and we need to hold him accountable. But of course, the jury, they couldn't get past reasonable doubt.
Because of Clark. Clark was the variable that you cannot get past. We can all get past it on our own heads and say, you know, I think he's guilty, but beyond a reasonable doubt is hard to get to when there's two players, two suspects, and you don't know which one did it.
This is not satisfying for Marianne Shockley's family. And I understand if they don't like this verdict, which I know they don't like it. I've read comments. And I think this just goes to show that it doesn't matter how a case is investigated. You know, some situations are so difficult that there's no way really to find justice in this case, is the way I would say it, right? Because the jury did what it could. It took in the information, but it couldn't get past the reasonable doubt. I have empathy for the family, for sure, but I totally understand why the jury came to the decision they did. The thing is, Justin, the judge, Allison Burleson, she didn't like this verdict.
She thought the jury got it wrong.
This is what she said. She said, in this case, I was sitting as the fact finder on this probation revocation case at the same time as the jury. And we'll get into that momentarily. She said, I listened to the evidence and considered all the same evidence, listened to the opening arguments and the closing arguments in the case. And Mr. Lillard, I've come to quite a bit of a different conclusion than what the jury has come to. And for that reason, I do find that the state has proven by the preponderance of the evidence, the crimes that are listed and the subsequent offenses in this probation petition. So I do find by the preponderance of the evidence that you violated probation in the manner alleged in the petition. And I'm going to revoke your probation for the balance of this sentence. Long story short, he has to serve the rest of his sentence for the drug charge through October 15th, 2030.
This judge is not being lenient towards him in any shape or form because she feels like this guy murdered his girlfriend.
She's just basically saying that, you know, unlike the jury, she listened to the same evidence, but she finds this very differently. I don't know. I still stick by the jury on this because there were two men there.
And if Marcus Lillard had been found guilty in an appeal, he could have said, hey, this other guy did it, and pointed out the guy's suicide note, pointed out the guy's state of mind that night, the drugs in his system, and how he took his own life immediately after the police showed up.
Yeah, as soon as he could. I mean, like you said, that deputy did his best to try and keep him there. But as soon as he turned his back just for a moment, he got into his own house, shut the door, and that was it.
At that point, I think you have Marcus Lillard winning an appeal if he had been found guilty. I don't think his conviction would have stuck because of all of the questions surrounding the case. As much as I might feel like he probably did this, it was probably his hands that were around her neck. When there's two people there, it's, you can't say one person did it and not the other, unless his hand was bleeding and his blood was all over her neck, or you found DNA all over her neck from him. But she was in a hot tub and a pool with chlorine in it. There's no way to see whose hands were around her throat. All the evidence would be washed away.
Yeah, I think they tried to protect themselves from that discussion by showing that Marcus had a propensity for doing this, putting his hands around women's necks. They don't have anything, as far as I know, where they were trying to show that Clark could have engaged in such behavior. I mean, all that was said was they seemed to set it up as, if Clark had done this, then maybe he had made a move on Marianne while Marcus was away.
Marcus made a statement. He said, the devil was at work. I mean, everything that he could have possibly done to line this thing up, to make it confusing and deceitful, and it was all there. I don't know if I'd blame the devil for making it confusing and deceitful. I think I'll blame the people that were there for making it confusing and deceitful.
Marianne's family issued a statement. The family of Marianne Shockley is devastated by the jury's April 8th verdict. Although justice in a courtroom would not have brought back Marianne, we sought accountability for this loss that will affect our lives forever. We thank the brave women who testified during this trial, as well as District Attorney T. Wright Barksdale, Assistant District Attorney Nancy Scott Melchor, and her team, and everyone who has advocated for and supported our family during the last 3 years. Our lives will never be the same, but Marianne Shockley's impact on everyone who knew her will live on forever.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY.
The most we can say in reference to the family statement is that some of these witnesses did seem to indicate that when Marcus put his hands around women's necks, or his hand around women's necks, it wasn't always pleasurable. When he was questioned about it, he became rather rude. And so some felt like this was a totally selfish act. And so you could understand why the family would think, yeah, he could kill someone, because he's not thinking about other people at that point. He's only thinking about himself.
It shows a pattern of behavior.
I don't know. I find this an interesting case, Justin, because so often you and I will answer the question of what we think happened, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes people take that to mean we think the jury should have found differently. Well, in this case, I mean, it sounds like you agree with me. The jury did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
They have to get past reasonable doubt to find him guilty, and they just couldn't do it. And that's the way our system is set up. I don't see anything here where it feels like there was a shortcut or there was some sort of problem with the prosecution. It seems like the defense and the prosecution went head to head. It seemed like the prosecution brought a lot more to court, but it didn't matter. The system worked like it was supposed to. It's just not always satisfying. Never miss an episode of Generation Y. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. After subscribing, please leave us a review. Our website is genypod.com. Visit to learn more about events and updates. Justin and I have other podcasts. Mine is Framed, an Investigative Story. Each season is a deep dive into a case that went wrong and why. Justin's other podcast is The Peripheral. His podcast is a safe space for listeners and their stories. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.